90 AM radio in Montreal.
You're listening to CJLO News. A prized historic melon has been stolen from a community garden at the Loyola campus. The Montreal melon was once a luxury good, grown right in Notre-Dame-de-Grâce and shipped to places like New York and Philadelphia. It was a popular and famous fruit from the 1880s into the mid-1930s, until it went practically extinct. Now, in 2025, Cult of Action, a gardening group with a plot here at the Loyola campus, has been trying to revive and recultivate the Montreal melon and restore it, at least locally, to its former glory. The group was able to find seeds from the near-extinct local fruit and start growing it again. Here is Nico Quinn, the director of the garden plot at Loyola and the co-founder of Cult of Action, talking about the history of the Montreal melon.
The melon was being sold to very wealthy areas in New York City, Boston, Philadelphia. Most notably, it was served at the Delmonico Hotel.
The recultivation of this melon is a project in living agricultural history, an attempt to bring the community together over a historic, once luxurious good specific to NDG. In fact, the melon was hyper-local to the area of NDG.
So, for example, some Italians will say it's not limoncello if the lemons aren't from the Amalfi Coast or Sorrento or areas like this. Those are regions. Here in the Montreal melon, this is the NDG melon. Because of the microclimate that happens, you know, of course we're on an island, the microclimate that happens in between Mount Royal and the St. Lawrence, and we're on a sloped hill, we're in the valley of this area. So it's a very, very specific microclimate. So a Montreal melon that's grown in Rosemont is not going to be the same as a Montreal melon that's grown in NDG. It is the most hyperlocal food, vegetable, anything. Like even Matsutake mushroom is very famous for, you know, Japan. It's also in BC. But like the Montreal melon, even the difference in borough will change the flavor of the melon.
Cult of Action faced challenges in regrowing this finicky fruit, with many being eaten by beetles or groundhogs. On August 19th, gardeners realized the one remaining prized melon they were able to recultivate, which was close to ripening, had been stolen.
We're all devastated. Like, it's been a tough morning because we discovered it today. So it's been like 2 hours of screaming and crying and pounding our fists into the ground. But they didn't just take a melon. Like, it is a piece of agricultural history, and that a lot of our community members are emotionally bound up in, so it's a huge loss.
This story isn't over. Other gardening groups were given seeds from Cult of Action, and the group itself will not give up on bringing this dead melon back from the grave. For CJLO News, I'm Adam Innes.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Tommy John Show here on CJLO 1690 AM in Montreal. Hope everyone's doing well. We have made it, ladies and gentlemen. We have made it. It is officially the greatest time of the year to be a sports fan. Labor Day weekend is this weekend. So you know what that means. College football starting up. The NFL is less than 2 weeks away. And the U.S. Open is here. The first round started last night, or I guess yesterday, and amazing matches last night, obviously capped off by that Medvedev thriller. We will get into all of it, but we are finally here. I know we said this before over the summer. We're just trying to get to Labor Day weekend, This is our last show before Labor Day weekend. Then we'll be back in 2 weeks' time. Recapping week one of the NFL, the first 2 weeks of college football. Man, it is truly go time here on the Tommy John Show. And if you're new to the program, you can follow us on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, you name it. The Tommy John Show is on it. And now we're up on Spotify. So if you miss the show, no worries. Check out the Tommy John Show on Spotify and you can get the whole show every Monday evening. It's roughly around like 4 or 5 o'clock is when we post it. So if you check it out on Monday evening, if you missed the program, it should be up on Spotify. So make sure to do that. So I appreciate you guys for listening. And we are going to kick things off with breaking news in the National Football League. Breaking news, Terry McLaurin and the Washington Commanders agree to a 3-year $96 million extension that will keep Terry McLaurin with the Commanders until 2028. And I hate to be that guy who says I told you so, but how many times over the summer did I say Terry McLaurin, TJ Watt, those guys are not going anywhere. They're not going anywhere. You think Washington, who acquired Deebo Samuel, who acquired Laremy Tunsil, who went in and got Lattimore during the season, you think the team that finally has a franchise quarterback, their first since Joe Theismann, I know they had RG3 for an hour and they had Kirk Cousins for a little bit, but they haven't had a guy like Jaden Daniels in a long, long time, maybe ever, and they weren't going to sign his number one option? Really? They were just going to trade him when they're trying to make a run for a Super Bowl? Really? It didn't make any sense. And I understood why Terry McLaurin requested a trade. It's his agent saying, hey, we want to get every last dime out of the Washington Commanders. We're going to request a trade. We're not going to show up to training camp. And when we do show up to training camp, we're not actually going to play. We're just going to sit in a t-shirt and shorts and have the cameras all on me and driving up my value and people discuss how important I am to this team. And that's exactly what happened. Terry McLaurin was leading the headlines. Everyone was talking about Terry McLaurin. Oh, is he going to sign? Who's going to trade for him? New England wants him. Buffalo wants him. But the entire time here on the program, we knew it was BS. We knew it. He wasn't going anywhere. You thought, really thought. If anyone thought the Commanders were going to trade him, you're nuts. Now, I know historically the Commanders have been a gong show of an organization. They were amazing in the 80s and the early 90s. We understand that. They won 3 Super Bowls. But when Schneider ran the team, it was a gong show. The stadium is falling apart. They just had awful off seasons. They hired the wrong coaches. They kept Jay Gruden over Sean McVay and Shanahan and all those guys. We understand the Commanders we're not a well-run organization, but this is a new ownership group, a new GM, new head coach, new everything. This is a new era of Washington Commanders football, and they were not under any circumstances, going to trade Terry McLaurin. They were going to come to an agreement on a deal, and he would be ready for week one. And here we are, what? 9 days before the start of the regular season, Terry McLaurin gets his deal done. Now, there's other pieces involved in this negotiation. I doubt the agent wanted him out of Washington. I doubt that the agent wanted him to take this contract. He probably wanted more. But at a certain point, you just have to say, hey, what are we doing here? I don't want to give up game check money. I don't want to give up over $1 million a game. Let's just get this deal done. So they kick the can down the road down the road, down the road. The agent wasn't caving, wasn't caving. And then they eventually come back to a reasonable number. But he got more than he was getting before. 3 years, $96 million. And includes a $30 million signing bonus. Terry McLaurin did very well out of all this. And considering that he's in his... Is he 30 yet? He might be 30. Considering to get this kind of deal at this point of his career is astonishing. Because most wide receivers aren't signing these kind of deals at this age. He is 29. He's going to be 30 in a week. So being 30 years old, getting that deal, well done to Terry McLaurin and his agent. They did well. And the Commanders did well as well because they brought in the number one receiver on their football team to help them make a run. Again, we saw this 100 times over the last few years. We saw it last year with Brandon Ayuk. We've seen it in the past with Deebo Samuel. We have seen this constantly. Myles Garrett, TJ Watt, where these guys want their big pay increase. They want a nice big contract because they've outperformed the contract. And they want to get more money. They request a trade. They throw a fit. And then eventually the team says, fine, we'll give you more guaranteed money, more annual AAV. Let's just get this done. The season starts in a week and the deal gets done. The same thing happened to Brandon Ayuk a year ago. Literally the same thing. And now it happens with Terry McLaurin. Do you think Terry McLaurin wanted to go to New England? Do you think Terry McLaurin wanted to go to Carolina? How about New Orleans? Did Terry McLaurin want to go to New Orleans? Think about the teams that would trade for him. What team has Jaden Daniels as their quarterback? Which team is ready to win a Super Bowl right now? They weren't going to trade him to the Eagles. Maybe Kansas City or Buffalo would have made some sense. But outside of that, this is a team he knows. This is a team that was in the NFC Championship game in January. A team that's ready to win now, made huge offseason additions. They're bringing back the OC. He didn't get a head coaching job, so Cliff Kingsbury's back. And your young superstar quarterback is entering his second year. It would make zero sense if Terry McLaurin wanted to leave. It was all about getting every last dime from the Washington Commanders, and his agent and his team got it. Now he's ready to play ball. Now we're going to see Terry McLaurin on the practice field this week. Let's see how ready he is for week one. The one thing you notice from receivers when they sit out, or players in general when they sit out, it takes them a few games to get back to where they once were. But he's still got some time. They've got just over a week before they take on the New York Giants week one on Sunday. I believe that's a NFL Fox game. So that is wrapped up just about an hour ago. I believe it was around an hour ago when that news broke, but not surprising at all that Terry McLaurin is sticking around in Washington. No surprise. So we spent hours and hours and hours talking about it on this program. ESPN, Fox Sports, you name it, the Stephen A. Smiths, the Colin Cowards of the world kept talking about Terry McLaurin, where he might end up, when we knew, the Tommy John Show community knew the entire time he wasn't going anywhere. Why would he leave? So that's the big breaking news from today in the NFL. Terry McLaurin not going anywhere. There's still two big contract negotiations left. Maybe three if you include Cameron Hayward on the Steelers, but I ultimately think he'll play. Is Trey Hendrickson and Micah Parsons. Now, the Trey Hendrickson one is more interesting because the Bengals are known to being one of the cheapest organizations in NFL history, and that defense is so shocking that they need Trey Hendrickson. I mean, they had him last year, and they still sucked, so maybe they don't think they need him. They're just going to embrace that offense and try and score 50 points a game and win. But that's the situation that freaks me out the most. I ultimately believe Micah Parsons will sign with Dallas, even though he was taking a nap on the sidelines in the preseason game. He's out in the, whatever that was, the bench, the medical bench, just snoring and napping. So that wasn't great for optics, but push comes to shove. I ultimately believe Micah Parsons will get a deal done with the Dallas Cowboys rather soon. Rather soon. So we had college football over the weekend. We'll preview Texas and Ohio State as well. We also have huge matchups like LSU and Clemson. We have Notre Dame and Miami on Sunday. August 31st. That's going to be an awesome game as well. LSU Clemson at 7:30. What was the other big one? Alabama, Florida State at 3:30. Syracuse, Tennessee is not a bad game, but the one everyone's circling is Saturday at noon. Arch Manning and the number one ranked Texas Longhorns on the road in Columbus, Ohio, to take on the defending national champions, the number three ranked Ohio State Buckeyes. That is the big one this weekend. So I can't wait for that. We had a ranked matchup over the weekend. We had we had Iowa State and Kansas State playing in Dublin, Ireland in the Aer Lingus, whatever they call it, the classic. That was a decent football game. It was torrential downpour. It was a really entertaining football game, a lot of turnovers, but it's ultimately Iowa State who gets the job done. And man, if you're Kansas State, that's a killer loss. You're trying to gain some momentum. People loved you coming into the year. Avery Johnson played a lot last year. He's the reason why Will Howard went to Ohio State to win a national championship, is because Avery Johnson was showing up. And to lose a game, albeit week one, and it's plenty of time left, and if you win the Big 12, you're most likely going to the college football playoff, so it's not disastrous. But when you have Iowa State, who's a good team, at home, technically, in Dublin, Ireland, you'd like to win that football game. They let that one slip, and Iowa State starts the year with a win over the Kansas State University. The Wildcats, can't believe that one happened, so that's a shocking loss for Kansas State. They should have won that game. Most experts picked them to win that game. They're about a 3-point favorite. To let that one slip, not good. But that might not have been the worst loss of the weekend. Andrew Luck's trying to turn around this Stanford program as the GM of football, and they go out and they lose to Hawaii, 23-20. And this, I don't know who this Ben Gulbranson guy was. I know he was at Oregon State for 100 years. He's one of the worst quarterbacks I've ever seen. His completion percentage was around 50%. I think it was exactly 50%. He threw for 109 yards and threw one of the worst interceptions I've ever seen. I don't know why they didn't feed Micah Ford the ball more. I know he got 26 carries, but he could have easily had the ball 30, 40 times in that game. He was their best player by a mile. They went away from the run late, and it cost them because Ben Gulbranson was shocking. That quarterback in Hawaii was miles better than them. Alejado, he was very good, very accurate. He created plays, was shifty, could move. I really liked watching him play. That Ben Gulbranson guy, he set football back 100 years. It looked like it was leather helmet football. He could not do anything. He couldn't complete a forward pass. And Stanford, man, this is a scheme you circle. And you pray you can win that football game, start the year 1-0, and continue. Because if you think you're going to beat BYU and you're going to beat Boston College and you're going to beat Miami of Florida and Notre Dame and North Carolina, judging by that, how the hell are they going to do that? They couldn't beat Hawaii in the Mountain West. That was the worst loss of the weekend. And Kansas State's was bad. I thought the Stanford one was even worse. And I understand Kansas State lost to a ranked team, so it's not as bad. They're both Big 12 opponents. Anything can happen. Fair enough. Stanford losing to Hawaii when they're trying to turn the program around, that was a huge blow. A huge blow on Saturday afternoon. Shocking. Stanford losing to Hawaii. With Frank Reich, a former NFL coach, a good NFL coach too, on the sidelines, and it's a killer loss. But I cannot wait for Texas, Ohio State. That's the game I'm looking forward to the most. I am a Notre Dame guy, so Notre Dame in Miami on Sunday night, that will be much watch as well. But come on now, this is one of the best games of the year. And albeit it's not the end of the world if Texas loses or if Ohio State loses, because they're now with the 12-team playoff, anything can happen. You can lose three games. You can get into the playoff maybe. So I'm not concerned that if Texas loses, they're not going to go to the playoffs, or if Ohio State loses, they're not going to go to the playoff. But still, from a TV point of view, the hype behind Arch Manning starting his career as a Texas Longhorn, as QB1, not coming in for an injured Quinn Ewers and playing two games against Louisiana Monroe. I'm talking about him, week one, being the starting quarterback, the favorite to win the Heisman, the favorite to go number one overall in the draft. It's his team. It's now. It's not last year. No. Starting against UL Monroe does not count. Starting week one as the number one team in the country on the road against the defending national champions, the number three team in the country, the Ohio State Buckeyes, that's what I'm talking about. Here's Arch Manning talking about the expectations for him and the Texas Longhorns. They are the preseason number one team in the country. Remember that. Number one team in the country, favorite to go number one in the draft, favorite to win the Heisman Trophy from the greatest football family in America. There's a ton of pressure on Arch Manning and these Texas Longhorns. Here is Arch Manning discussing all the hype behind him and the Longhorns being the number one team in the country.
Yeah, I mean, that doesn't mean anything. Being ranked before the season even starts doesn't mean anything. I don't even know how they get those opinions. But I feel like we do a good job of keeping the main thing, trying to get better every day and go win some games.
Going back to playing on the road, you know, you used to have the boombox coming out the tunnel and everything. What is the difference that you got to solve? That you had to see, I should say, from last year's team going on the road. What was the kind of like the difference in mentality that you got to kind of witness?
Yeah, it's a different mentality. It's us against the world when you're on the road. And I think the teams in the previous years, I think Quinn did a really good job on the road. He had a ridiculous record on the road. So learn from him and the teams last year to carry over for this year.
Arch, we saw you go to St. Louis with Wingo in the offseason. What are some of the things you did to kind of get a chemistry with all the new receivers in the offseason?
Yeah, obviously just throwing extra and trying to get a rhythm with them. I think Wingo is a guy who's the last 2 weeks has been practicing really well. I mean, he made a ridiculous catch today. So it's been fun getting closer with him this offseason, and I'm excited for him this year.
So that's Arch Manning basically saying they haven't proven anything yet. And he's 100% right. On paper, they're stacked. They have one of the great recruiting classes in the country. They have star players all over the place. Their defense might be the best in college football. But he said it doesn't mean anything. It's preseason rankings. It's based on nothing. And he is right. No team has played yet, except for the week zero teams. But no team in the top 10, 15 have played yet. And they got to go out there and earn it. And they haven't earned it yet. And then that's well said. He's got amazing media training, obviously, with his family being the Mannings and Peyton and Eli and his grandfather. I understand he's been ready for this. But this is going to be some game on Saturday at noon, Texas and Ohio State. So can't wait for that. That Clemson LSU game, that has NFL talent all over the place. I know they have the two defenders on Clemson, Cade Klubnik, he might go number one overall. Garrett Nussmeier for LSU, maybe he'll go number one overall. They got a track team at wide receiver for LSU. So it's going to be a phenomenal slate of games. And Florida State's supposed to be back this year. They open with Alabama, and then Notre Dame trying to build off making the national championship game last year, playing Carson Beck and the Miami Hurricanes. Man, what a start to the year. What a start to the year. So quickly before our first break, we have to get into some of these scores at the U.S. Open. The big one we're going to talk about is the one from last night where Daniil Medvedev lost in five sets and then just completely snapped on the court, smashing his racket all over the place. He was down two sets. He fought back, saved match points to win 7-6 in the third, then dominated the fourth set, winning 6-love. Then in that fifth set, no one could hold serve. I was watching that. It was late at night. I just couldn't turn away. They just could not hold serve, Bonzi or Medvedev. Then Bonzi finally grinds out a hold and breaks Medvedev at 5-4 to win 6-5 in the fifth. And then Medvedev lost it, just smashing his racket on everything. What a horrendous year for Daniil Medvedev. 4 years ago, he dominated the field, won the U.S. Open. He's been in major finals, a couple in Australia. I remember he played that classic in New York against Nadal a few years ago. He's beat Sinner at Wimbledon 2 years ago to make a Wimbledon semi. Now he can't beat anyone. It's a sad time to be a Daniil Medvedev fan. He could not beat anyone. He's won one Grand Slam match this year. He won one round at the Australian Open, lost in the second round, then bounced in the first round at the French Wimbledon at the U.S. Open. Crazy. So that was the big storyline from day one. Daniil Medvedev, the 2021 U.S. Open champion, out in the first round. Novak Djokovic started things off very well with a win in straight sets. 6-1, 7-6, 6-2 over Lerner Tien. That's a big win for Djokovic, kicking off his campaign, his quest for major number 25. Ben Shelton winning in straight sets, 6-3, 6-2, 6-4. Taylor Fritz, the 4 seed, winning in straight sets, 7-5, 6-2, 6-3. Those are the big storylines on the men's side from yesterday. From the women's side, it was business as usual for the number 1 seed. Sabalenka, Arena. I keep mispronouncing her first name. Arena Sabalenka. She won 7-5, 6-1. Good day for the Canadians. Leila and Fernandez winning in straight sets, 6-2, 6-1 over Canadian Rebecca Marino. And what was the other big result yesterday? Emma Raducanu getting things kicked off with a win in straight sets, 6-1, 6-2. And that was pretty much the two main storylines as well. Jessica Pegula winning as well. So it's a good start to everyone for the tournament. Right now, Madison Keys is on court. She won the first set in a tiebreak, 12-10. And they're on serve in the second set. Samsonova's playing right now. She's into the third set. That's pretty much it right now. Jack Draper's on right now. Korda had to pull out of that event. I saw that. That's pretty much it right now. Tonight we have some big matches. Gabriel Diallo playing in the first round. Casper Ruud plays tonight. Carlos Alcaraz against Riley Opelka tonight on Arthur Ashe under the lights. That should be something. And Jannik Sinner will play tomorrow, I believe. He will play tomorrow at around 1 o'clock against Vít Kopřiva. Kopřiva from the Czech Republic. Denis Shapovalov will get things kick-started tomorrow morning at around 11 a.m. on Court 17 against Martin Fuchs, who he's had trouble with in the past. That's going to be a tricky matchup for him. That's where we are at the U.S. Open. Oh, I forgot to mention, too, Victorio Mboko, who took the world by storm, or Canada by storm, in the National Bank Open in Montreal. That was... Everyone was looking forward to watching her. She's out in the first round, losing 6-3, 6-2 to Barbara Krejcikova, which is a tough matchup. Is your first round. You're a 22nd seed, and you have to play someone who's won major championships before. She won Wimbledon. She's won the French in the past. That's a brutal first-round matchup that she got, and she falls in straight sets. So that's too bad for Victoria and Boko. So that's where we stand right now in the U.S. Open. We got two more weeks of this. I can't wait. And what I love about the U.S. Open are the night matches. Nothing against Wimbledon and the 11 p.m. curfew, but we want to see matches go deep into the night, at least for me. It's New York City. It fits the profile. Staying up late. Tennis under the lights at 11, 12 o'clock at night. And it's the best. Last night, watching Medvedev till 1 a.m., I forgot how much I loved it. I forgot how much I love late night tennis. So Alcaraz is the main one tonight, like we mentioned, around 8 o'clock, 8:10 start time against Riley Opelka. So that's our quick little U.S. Open recap. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we have to talk about the National Football League as it is underway in less than 2 weeks. I'll give you who I like this year, who I don't like, and also... we have to talk about Major League Baseball. The Blue Jays getting a nice series win in Miami. The Yankees losing 3 of 4 to the Red Sox. We're going to get into all of it next here on the Tommy John Show.
At Cinema Public, we offer a theatrical program made up of local films and international new releases, classics and little-known nuggets, as well as short films and family screenings. Our tickets are among the cheapest in Montreal, $10 for a regular entry or $8 for students, children, and seniors. We also offer 6-ticket movie cards for even more savings. Come see us at Casa d'Italia, just across from Jontolo Metro, and visit cinemapublic.ca to discover our programming. Le Cinema Public for a lively cinema.
Hey, are you looking for an alternative to FM radio playlists? Then tune in to the World Beat News radio program right here on CJLO 1690 AM every Tuesday from noon to 1 p.m. to hear brand new World Beat music from mainly Canadian artists. Call or text at 848-7471.
Here in the Tommy John Show. Forgot to mention as well, the PGA Tour season ended yesterday, and just as an unbelievable way to end the year with Tommy Fleetwood getting his first career victory. And we have mentioned on this show countless of times about the close calls of Tommy Fleetwood, whether it was the Travelers a few weeks ago when he had a one-shot lead on the last hole, he makes bogey, Keegan Bradley makes birdie, and it swings like that, and Keegan Bradley wins the Travelers. 2 weeks ago in Memphis, he had a lead with a few holes left and let that one slip away and let Justin Rose win that one. And then yesterday, the biggest event on the PGA Tour, the Tour Championship, and he finally gets it done. What a great story. He's an unbelievable guy, too. He always does media after he loses. He's just one of the nicest guys you'll meet on the PGA Tour. And he's playing some good golf. And if you're a Europe fan for the Ryder Cup, Rory seems to have got his game back a little bit. He drove it beautifully this week. And also, he had one of the best years of his career, winning the Masters, winning the Players, winning a Pebble. You have Justin Rose, who's playing great golf. You have Tommy Fleetwood, Victor Hovland. I assume they're going to take John Rahm on the team as well. This is a very good European team that's playing well, playing really well. Man, cannot believe Tommy Fleetwood got it done. And something was telling me he was getting close, just the close calls. But a lot of the time when you have heartbreak like that, it's hard to bounce back. He was heartbroken at the travel. The Travelers one was the worst one. You have a one-shot lead on the last hole, and you bogey and you see your opponent birdie. It was such a dramatic loss in an elevated event like that. I thought that would maybe throw him off his game a little bit, but he came back, played well in Memphis, was in the hunt at Memphis, let that one slip, but he wasn't going to let that happen at Eastlake yesterday afternoon. So Tommy Fleetwood, the FedEx Cup champion for 2025, the Tour Championship winner for 2025. Here was him after getting his first ever PGA Tour victory and taking home a lot of money because of it.
Oh my goodness, it's a collective sigh of relief. Tommy, this was the third time this season you have held the 54-hole lead on the PGA Tour. You have admitted that you didn't close it out in the past. What did you do differently today here at Eastlake?
You just keep learning, don't you? I think, this one, I guess, You know, there was Travelers, there was Memphis, and obviously plenty before. This probably wasn't the most comfortable I've been, because as it as they rack up, you obviously start to think of the things. But I feel like I've had a great attitude. You know, that's it. I've had a great attitude throughout it all. And, you know, I was a bit erratic today at times, and I was really proud of how I found my swing again on the, like, 11th or 12th hole. Changed my routine a little bit, and... yeah, it was. I mean, still, I don't know, when you've lost it so many times, 3-shot lead down the last doesn't feel like that many.
You told me on Thursday that you had dreamt about making this the Tour Championship and therefore the FedEx Cup your first PGA Tour win. 164 starts, 30 top five finishes. How does the reality of this moment, Tommy, compare to the idea?
Well, I think I'm proud of what I've done before. You know, whether I've won or not, I've still been proud of my career and where I've been so far, knowing that I still have a long way to go and a lot to learn. And this doesn't change that, really. This is just hopefully one win, the first of many to come. You know, you can't win plenty if you don't win the first one. And I'm just so happy that I got it done and happy with my work ethic. And I'll continue to try and get better and try and be the best that I can be.
So that was Tommy Fleetwood after winning the FedEx Cup yesterday. And I do have problems with the FedEx Cup format. It should be the... I liked it where it was in the past, where it was a season-long trophy. They tell you every single week, it's the season-long race for the FedEx Cup. It's the season-long race. It's the Arnold Palmer Invitational for the season-long race for the FedEx Cup. That's what they all say, all week. And then you have a player this year, like Scottie Scheffler, who wins, I don't know how many events, 5-6 events this year. He should have won the FedEx Cup this year. Or if Rory won the Tour Championship, then he could have won the FedEx Cup, because then he would have won the Tour Championship, the Masters, the Players, Pebble Beach. Okay, he won 4 times. Scottie Scheffler won 5 times. It should be a season-long race. And then the Tour Championship should be its separate trophy, like it used to be. I remember in 2015, Spieth won both. You win the Tour Championship, you win the FedEx Cup. That's what happened with Rory in 2016. But if Rory didn't win the Tour Championship, Dustin Johnson was going to win the FedEx Cup despite him not winning the Tour Championship. I forget what year it was, 2008, 2009, around there. Phil won the Tour Championship, but the season-long race for the FedEx Cup, Tiger won. So there's the picture of Phil and Tiger. To me, having the winner of the Tour Championship win the FedEx Cup, okay. Fair enough, but then don't call it the season-long race. Call it the season-long race to make the Tour Championship. And then who wins the Tour Championship wins the season. That should be the name of the title. It's not the season-long race for the FedEx Cup. It's the season-long race to make the FedEx Cup playoffs. It's a season-long race to make the top 30 to get to Eastlake. And then it's whoever wins Eastlake. But to me, if they want to fix all their problems, make it the season-long race for the FedEx Cup. Make it that, and had the Tour Championship as its separate trophy. I don't know why that's such a hard thing to discuss, but I love Tommy Fleetwood. He's a great guy, one of the nicest people you'll ever meet on the PGA Tour. He got his first win ever yesterday, and he won the FedEx Cup. Did he have a better year than Scottie Scheffler? Did he have as many FedEx Cup points as Scottie Scheffler? Technically, the way he should have rolled, the only one who would have had a chance to catch Scottie Scheffler would have been Rory. That should have been the only player. Maybe, well, Sepp Straka, maybe, what, he won the Truist and he won the Amex? Or he didn't even win the Amex. For the other one he won. I think he won the Amex. Yeah, he won the Amex and the Truist. But, like, come on. I love Tommy Fleetwood now. But that format kind of stinks. I like the no starting strokes thing, don't get me wrong. The starting strokes thing was a bit gimmicky. To me, you just have your season-long race to win the FedEx Cup. You add points. And yes, the playoff events are worth more. I'm not saying that. End of the year, it's worth more. But the idea that you say it's the season-long race for the FedEx Cup and it's not is kind of cringy to me. The season-long race for the FedEx Cup. No, they have to change. If they're going to keep the same format now next year, it's not the season-long race for the FedEx Cup. It's the season-long race to make the FedEx Cup playoffs, and it's the season-long race to make Eastlake, and then we get to Eastlake and we see what happens. That should be the name of it. Or, for the 100th time I'm going to say it, Make the FedEx Cup its own trophy. Make the Tour Championship its own trophy. Now, the Tour Championship can be the event with the most FedEx Cup points. Make it equivalent to the Players or a major. I don't know. You can do whatever the hell you want with that. But when you have a player like Scottie Scheffler, who had the year that he had to not win the FedEx Cup, it's kind of crazy to me. Or 2 years ago when Rory won his third one. That should have been Scottie as well. He won how many events? And I know there were starting strokes and all that thing, and Rory just played out of his mind on the weekend to win the tournament. But that should not have happened. To me, there should have been two players competing for the FedEx Cup this year, and that was Rory and Scottie. They both won. Scottie won five times. Rory won three times going into the last event. Rory won bigger events besides the two majors, right? Rory won the Masters, Players, Pebble. Scottie won Byron Nelson, Memorial, the two majors, and oh my God, the other event, the BMW. So I guess they're around the same. But Scottie or Rory should have won the season-long race for the FedEx Cup, not Tommy Fleetwood. So I hope they do something. The idea, the match play is cool. I've heard people float around the match play bracket, but you're going to do the whole year stroke play, then do the last event as match play. That's kind of weird. I don't know. To me, you just do season-long race for the FedEx Cup, Tour Championships worth the most points. That's it. That's it. That's how it should be done. So that's my quick little rant about the FedEx Cup. But now we got the Ryder Cup coming up in a month's time or so, around September 20th at Bethpage Black. Cannot wait for that. And then it's a little dead in the golf season after the FedEx Cup, let's be honest. It gets in, then it's full football season, and we'll start getting into golf again when football dies down. Then in February, you have your big events in Florida. You have the Florida Swing. Then you get ready for the Players in March. Then you're ready to kick off the major season in April. So we have one more big golf event in the year, the Ryder Cup, in September. And then that's pretty much it for the golf calendar. Golf and tennis winding down, which is too bad. But it's all good because the National Football League and college football is here. So we have made it. And we quickly have to talk about some of the teams I like this year. So we'll start with the AFC. And everyone's going to say Kansas City, Buffalo, Baltimore. Okay, thank you. Really, really appreciate it. Thanks for naming those three teams. But I want to look at the teams that could challenge those teams. Now, if you look at Buffalo, Kansas City, Baltimore, what do they all have? They all have all-world quarterbacks, MVP-winning quarterbacks. They all have very good defenses. Buffalo's not as strong as Kansas City and Baltimore's, but very good defenses and good head coaching. Again, Sean McDermott not in the same level as Harbaugh and Andy Reid, but he's a well above average NFL head coach. So those teams are the best coach, they have the best quarterbacks, and they all have good defenses. So we need teams cut from that cloth to compete with them, if there's going to be a team that does. You need good coaching and you need good quarterback play. I'm sorry I don't have the Tennessee Titans or the New York Jets or the Miami Dolphins or the teams of that nature making a run at Kansas City, Baltimore, Buffalo. I'm sorry. I just don't. Sorry to get that out of the way now. I know why. The coaching and the quarterback play, not good enough. So those are my two big requirements. How's your quarterback situation? Who's your head coach? And then we have some other factors. The defense. The skill talent. To me, defense goes above skill talent. My number one's quarterback. Number two's head coach. Number three's defense. So if we look around the AFC, what teams fit the mold of good coach, good quarterback, good defense? To me, there's two very good examples of this, and a third one which remains to be seen. Number one's the Chargers. We have to say the Chargers. Justin Herbert's a very good quarterback, a top 10 quarterback. Now we can discuss his playoff performances and how bad they've been. I understand it. But week one through week 18, Justin Herbert's a top 10 quarterback in the National Football League. Who's his head coach? How about Jim Harbaugh? Was he not one of the best 10 to 5 coaches in the National Football League, 5 to 10 in that range. He's gone to a Super Bowl, took the Niners to countless NFC Championship games, won a national championship in Michigan. He's a hell of a football coach. And how was their defense? How about number one in the league last year? Not a lot of star names, I understand it, but they're well-coached, amazing coordinators. To me, the Chargers are one of the threats to those three teams. Who's another threat? I'll let you guess. How about the Denver Broncos? What do they have, Tommy? They may have the most talented defense in all of football. They have the best corner in all of football. They invested in the defensive front with Greenlaw and Fuanga and all those guys. They still have Bonino there. The Broncos defense is going to be amazing this year. And Joseph's a hell of a coordinator. So then we go to the head coach at Sean Payton. He is a proven winner in the National Football League, one of the great offensive minds in football. And let's be honest, Bo Nix surprised a lot of people, including myself last year. The Bo Nix I saw at Oregon is not the Bo Nix now. Or sorry, at Auburn. He looked better at Oregon. But the Bo Nix I saw as a freshman at Auburn, compared to the Bo Nix now, it is night and day. And the main reason for that, he played 100 million snaps in college, went to Oregon, went to a more offensive-friendly system in Oregon, and then he gets Sean Payton as his head coach, and he is completely taken off. Now, I'm not expecting Bo Nix to win the MVP, but Bo Nix, to me, should have a very good second year in the league. There's talent all over the place. They brought in Evan Engram, so he's going to have a security blanket at tight end. The offensive line's very good. To me, Denver fits the mold of good quarterback, good head coach, and not just a good defense, but a great defense. The other team that fits that mold, the Houston Texans. C.J. Stroud, people like to say it was a down year last year compared to his rookie year. That's true. But he didn't have a bad year by any means, and they actually made it farther in the playoffs than they did the year before. They were out in the wild card. They made the same point as last year, people forget. They both won wild card games in his first 2 years, and then they lose to a much better team in the divisional round. But they played Kansas City much tougher than they did Baltimore the year prior. Let's look at the head coach. DeMeco Ryans, is he not one of the best 10 coaches in all of football right now? He is. How's that defense? Probably one of the 5 best in all of football. Now, the offensive line is a huge question mark. They let Tunzel go. They let Shaq Mason go. They let all these guys go, and they bring in Cam Robinson. They drafted the kid Ursary out of Minnesota. Joe Mixon's battling an injury right now. So, okay, maybe the firepower is not what it was a few years ago when they had Tank Dell healthy, when they had Stephon Diggs. But to me, they had a very good draft. They got the two receivers, Noel and Higgins, from Iowa State. Apparently, Higgins has been a beast in practice. They're well-coached, new offensive coordinator, and that defense in that division, they're going to win games and probably win that division. So to me, those are the three clear-cut threats to Buffalo, to Baltimore, to Kansas City. Now I said there was another one we got to look at that could possibly fit that mold. And it's the Pittsburgh Steelers. I'm sorry, New England, I need to see the defense. I need to see Drake May with Josh McDaniels throughout a whole game, throughout 2, 3, 4, 5 weeks. I need to see it. I need to see Trevor Lawrence under Liam Cohen with Travis Hunter, with Brian Thomas Jr. I need to see Geno Smith in that situation with Jenty and Brock Bowers. I need to see Cam Ward as a rookie. I need to see how Daniel Jones will play as Indianapolis Colt. I need to see those things. I have an idea how that Daniel Jones thing will go, but I need to see it. But what I have seen, I've seen C.J. Stroud play well, drag a team to the playoffs, and I've seen that defense play unbelievable. I've seen Bo Nix be very productive as a quarterback and that defense be amazing. I've seen Jim Harbaugh teams, and I have seen Justin Herbert play very well in the regular season. So I know those teams are going to compete. The other team I had was Pittsburgh. You know why? I've seen that defense, and I've seen Mike Tomlin coach teams. They don't have losing records. Now, the big question mark is obviously Aaron Rodgers. How is Aaron Rodgers going to play? Well, they had Russell Wilson and Justin Fields last year who they can't throw, and they made the postseason. I'd like to think Aaron Rodgers with DK Metcalf, with Jonnu Smith and Freiermuth, with a decent run game, Arthur Smith's a better offensive coordinator than Nathaniel Hackett. I think they're going to win some football games. Do I think they're going to win the Super Bowl and represent the AFC in the Super Bowl? No. But I think they can give teams a tough time. Last time I checked, Hayward's still there. TJ Watt's still there. They brought in Jalen Ramsey. Highsmith. The list goes on and on. That defense is going to be one of the five best in football. Mike Tomlin is one of the best coaches in football in the regular season. No questions. Now, they have more firepower on offense than before, and nothing against Russell Wilson and Justin Fields. Aaron Rodgers, still at 41, is a better thrower of the football and a better decision maker than both of them. I'm sorry, I'm not the biggest Aaron Rodgers fan at this point in his career, but to say he's not an upgrade over Russ or Justin Fields in the pass game is crazy. Look at Justin Fields in the preseason the other night. Oh my goodness, was that hard to watch. It was hard to watch. He can't throw. He can't throw. He can run. He can use his legs. He can't throw the ball down the field. I love the trade they made, getting Jonnu Smith in, bringing Jalen Ramsey in. They still had Freiermuth there. The offensive line is going to be okay. But to me, Arthur Smith, he's had success in the league before. I didn't love him as a head coach, but as a coordinator, he's had success before. And I believe the Steelers are going to win some football games. And they're going to make the playoffs. So to me, right now, I would pick Buffalo, Kansas City, Baltimore, Houston to win their divisions. And my three wildcard teams will be the Chargers, the Broncos, and the Steelers. Now, there's one big team I am leaving out of there, and that's the Cincinnati Bengals. And it's not because of Joe Burrow. It's not because of Ja'Marr Chase. It's not because of T. Higgins. And it's really not even a part because of Zach Taylor either. It's because that franchise just keeps getting in its own way. That Trey Hendrickson situation should have been done months ago. That Ja'Marr Stewart situation should have been done months ago. It got done a few weeks ago, but how in the world is a rookie free agent missing training camp time? That is so valuable to a rookie. And they were just letting him miss time over language and a contract. The owner's cheap. They're doing a Ring of Honor ceremony. Boomer Esiason has to pay for his flight, his hotel room, his car. It's like, Jesus, Murphy. Do they pay for anything? Oh, it's just terrible, terrible. And they are wasting Joe Burrow, who I believe is one of the three best quarterbacks in the world. Just wasting him. Ja'Marr Chase is the best receiver in football. T. Higgins is the best number two option in all of football. Chase Brown's a good running back. They're just wasting all these guys. And it wouldn't surprise me if in a year or two, if nothing changes, Joe Burrow would want out of Cincinnati. And he rightfully so. Because that owner is so cheap. And this is a Cincinnati Bengals team that never gets off to a good start. And the NFL gifted them a start. The Browns and the Jaguars to start the year. If they're not 1-1 or 2-0, then they should just sell the team. That's horrendous. So who do I trust more, Zach Taylor or Mike Tomlin? I'll trust Mike Tomlin. How bad is the Bengals' defense? Maybe the worst I've ever seen. And I understand they have such an advantage at quarterback and wide receiver, but that offensive line still stinks. How many years have we been saying, get Joe Burrow a defense, get Joe Burrow an offensive line? How many years? His first year fully healthy, he led him to the Super Bowl. The next year, they went to an AFC Championship game, and they were right there with the Chiefs. Since then, horrendous defensive play, horrendous offensive line play. And Joe Burrow is so good, he might drag him to 6, 7, 8, maybe 9 wins by himself. But if you're asking me right now on a neutral field who I think would win, Pittsburgh or Cincinnati, I'm taking Pittsburgh. They have a better head coach, miles better defense. They'll get some stops. And you think that Bengals defense can stop anyone? They can't stop a cold. And I'm a Patriots fan. I love what Mike Vrabel's doing. He's changing the culture. Drake May has all the talent in the world. I like that they brought in Josh McDaniels. He's working on his mechanics because it was getting a bit loose there in the preseason. There's videos of him practicing his footwork. I think the Patriots are going to be much improved this year. I think the Raiders are going to be much improved this year. I think Jacksonville is going to be much improved this year, too. Liam Cohen's a great offensive mind, and I still have some faith. Call me crazy in Trevor Lawrence. But if you ask me who are going to be my three wildcard teams, assuming the division winners stay the same, it's the Chargers, it's the Broncos, and it's the Steelers. I don't know why any of that would change. I don't. I don't know why any of that would change. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we have to talk about who I like in the NFC. And can anyone, and I repeat, can anyone stop the Philadelphia Eagles? I'm Tommy Lane for the Tommy John Show. Back after this quick word from our sponsors. Do not go away.
Into the ultimate comic haven at Crossover Comics. Unleash your inner geek with the best selection of graphic novels, manga, games like Pokemon and Magic, in-store events, merch, and more. Our knowledgeable and friendly staff have got your back with awesome recommendations for your next read. Score big with a free account. Enjoy comic subscriptions and membership discounts. Be in on the action at 3560 Notre Dame West in St. Henry, right near Metro Lionel Brew. Crossover Comics. Sharing your passion since 2012.
Tune in to Eastern Promises every Sunday at 8 p.m. with me, Donald Robert, as I take you through the latest and greatest music from Atlantic Canada. Featuring everything from traditional fiddle music to hip-hop, jazz, metal, as well as Acadian and Indigenous sounds, Eastern Promises will take you on a journey from westernmost New Brunswick to the furthest edges of Newfoundland. I'll be bringing you music news, tour dates, and some down-home comfort for all you Montreal expats. Join me as I curate a playlist that showcases the extraordinary talent coming out of Canada's right coast since time immemorial. That's Eastern Promises, every Sunday at 8 p.m. here on CJLO 1690.
Back here on Tommy John Show. Quickly have to mention Major League Baseball. What a weekend it was between the Red Sox and the Yankees. The Red Sox taking 3-4 from New York. They are now have a half game lead on the Yankees in the wild card race. But it's still the Toronto Blue Jays leading the way in the East, in the American League East. The Tigers leading the way in the Central. The Astros leading the way in the West. Right now your wild card teams are Boston, New York, Seattle. Quickly to the National League, it is still the Milwaukee Brewers leading all of Major League Baseball at 81-50, leading the Central. The Phillies leading the East. The Padres and the Dodgers played a great series over the weekend. The Padres taking 2-3 from LA, and they are tied atop of the National League West. Your wild card teams, the Cubs, Dodgers, and Padres are tied, and the New York Mets, and they have a 1.5 game lead on the Cincinnati Reds. So there's your quick little baseball recap. Got that in quickly. So who do I like in the NFC? Philadelphia, obviously. I think Tampa Bay is going to have a really good year. If you have a good offensive line, Baker Mayfield, and great skill position players. This Amike Ibuka kid from Ohio State's unbelievable. Mike Evans is going to be healthy. They're going to get Chris Godwin back. They have Bucky Irving. The Buccaneers are going to be fine. Going to be fine. Out west, the Rams look great. San Francisco has an easy schedule. The real mystery team to me, Seattle, they have a fantastic defense. And Sam Darnold is sticking in a similar kind of offense that he had in Minnesota. So that's an interesting one to me. But the real questions all come from that NFC North. That's where it's going to come down to. How are the Bears going to play under Ben Johnson? Is J.J. McCarthy going to just keep the Vikings afloat? How is Green Bay going to do? And will all the coordinator losses affect the Lions? To me, the Lions on paper are still the best team. They have the best offensive line. Jared Goff's still a Pro Bowl caliber quarterback. Jahmyr Gibbs is one of the three best running backs in all football. Sam LaPorta is still there. Amara St. Brown's still there. Jameson Williams is still there. Aiden Hutchinson's healthy. McNeil's healthy. The Lions, to me, on paper, are still the best team. Now we're going to find out if Dan Campbell's a meathead and just had amazing coordinators in Aaron Glenn and Ben Johnson. We're going to find that out rather quickly. But we're going strictly on paper. The Lions are the best team in the North. To me, Minnesota is right there with them. I love Kevin O'Connell. I love Brian Flores. And as skeptical as I was of J.J. McCarthy in college at Michigan, him not being able to throw the ball in the second half against Penn State and they would win the game, he's gone to the best possible location. Amazing weapons, great offensive line, best play caller maybe in all football outside of Sean McVay. To me, Minnesota's going to be right there. So I believe the Minnesota Vikings and the Detroit Lions, along with Tampa Bay, are three of the biggest threats to the Eagles. Call me crazy, I think Tampa's going to have a very good year. Thank you guys for listening. We'll be back next Monday, 1 to 2 p.m. Eastern, right here on CGLO 1690 AM, where we will preview week one of the NFL. I can't wait. I'm Tommy Lane for the Tommy John Show. Thank you so much for listening, and we will speak to you all next time.
Hi, this is Remy from At the Movies.